Scent. Written by Toes Taste Good and read by Eos Rose. Merlin is about 99% sure that the first thing that people are supposed to do upon meeting you is not to press you against the nearest wall and start sniffing you. No handshakes, no, "Hi, how are you?" No, "My name's Rude Pratt, what's yours?" Push and sniff. That's all. He hears the stranger take another deep inhale, face buried in his neck with his nose brushing against Merlin's skin. His blonde hair tickles against Merlin's jaw, and the grip of his hands on Merlin's upper arms is almost unnaturally strong. He'll probably have bruises there tomorrow. Merlin says, clearing his throat awkwardly and wondering what is the appropriate thing to say in this kind of situation. He's new to Camelot and new to the castle, but even he knows enough to say that this is not normal around here. "Can I help you?" "You smell good," the stranger growls at him. His hands clench on Merlin's arm. Merlin blinks, then looks around the empty stone corridor that they're in. It doesn't seem that anyone is going to come along and untangle him anytime soon. "Thank you, I think. Will you let go of me now?" The stranger's hands only tighten. Merlin decides to clear his throat at him. "Really, I have things I have to do today." "You're a servant," the man sighs, still buried in his neck. "It can't be that important." Merlin rolls his eyes. "Certainly not as important as sniffing random people's necks, but we can't all be as vitally integral to the running of the castle as you. I need to go. You need to let me go." The stranger pulls back and meets Merlin's gaze, still pinning him against the wall with supernaturally strong hands. "I want to taste you." That's not exactly what Merlin had been expecting as a response. His mouth flounders for a few moments, lost for words. His mother had warned him that there were some very strange people around once he left the village. He'd thought she was exaggerating, as overprotective as ever. "I don't know you that well yet," he says once his brain kicks into gear. "Yet." The second that word slips out, he's mentally kicking himself and wondering if he has some kind of death wish. Associating with random neck sniffers cannot be good for your health, even if you have magic skills to protect yourself with. The stranger's mouth twitches in a smile that looks naturally cruel. "What is it?" he asks. "Why do you smell so..." "I smell perfectly normal, thank you very much," Merlin says, while resisting the urge to raise his arm and take a whiff. Eyes narrow and focus on his neck, lingering there without responding to Merlin's defense of his scent. "What did you say your name was?"
"I never told you my name, but it's Merlin."
Nodding, the stranger backs away. "I'm Arthur," he says.
"I'll see you soon, Merlin."
It's hard to tell if that's a promise or a threat or something halfway in between. Merlin watches Arthur retreating up the corridor and restrains a shiver. There's something just not right about that man. It isn't until he's half asleep that night that he realizes what it was that had bothered him. When Arthur pulled back from his neck, his eyes had been black. Unqualified. Written by Toes Taste Good and read by Eos Rose. Merlin has to confess that he isn't entirely sure what's going on right now. He's been living in a state of constant confusion since he first turned up in Camelot. He should have known that after that sniffing incident, things were only going to get weirder. But he'd still been surprised when, this morning, Guys had frowned at him and told him that the king had requested that he go to the Great Hall at once. So that is how he found himself here,
standing in the center of the hall with the attention of more nobles than he's ever seen in his life, all focused on him. Nerve-wracking, to be sure. Even more nerve-wracking is the fact that Arthur, neck-sniffer extraordinaire, is standing beside the king's throne and watching him with an expression that suggests he is contemplating surging forward at any moment to indulge in a little more sniffing. Merlin struggles not to squirm under the intense attention, and that's just from one person. There are others in the room, lords and ladies and bloody kings, though Merlin will admit that they're not all watching him with the same hunger as Neck Sniffer.
"Are you certain?" King Uther asks the man at his side.
Ah, that's the other disturbing revelation of the day. Neck Sniffer is actually the Prince of Camelot, the king's son and heir. Merlin had felt ready to start laughing when he'd first found out, before he'd quickly come to the realization that Gaius was not laughing at all. Now he finds himself in front of a royal family that is a lot stranger than he'd ever imagined could exist.
"Yes,"
Arthur says, answering his father, though he doesn't look away from Merlin. At least his eyes are back to looking normal again. Merlin can almost convince himself that the inky blackness that had stared at him in the hallway yesterday was just a figment of his ridiculous imagination.
"I'm absolutely certain, father."
The king nods and, with an expression that looks rather confused, turns to survey Merlin where he stands.
"Very well,"
he murmurs, with a vague wave of his hand. His voice has the same tone that Merlin has heard many times in his lifetime from his mother, the tone of a parent giving in to a child's demands in order to escape endless snagging.
"You may have him."
"He may what?" Merlin asks, eyes going wide. They become even wider when he realizes that that is no way to address the king. He fidgets uncomfortably on the spot and clears his throat, wishing that King Uther would stop looking at him like that, like he was a particularly unpleasant stain on the bathroom floor.
"I mean to ask, what is happening, Your Majesty?"
Slight improvement on the phrasing, but not by much. Uther looks towards his son instead of deigning to answer Merlin. There's the faint twist of a smile on his lips.
"Good luck," he says.
Arthur grins back at Uther, bright and threatening. Merlin feels the hairs on the back of his arm stand up without quite being able to explain why.
"Come on, then," Arthur says, marching forward to Merlin's side.
He grips Merlin by the elbow, and Merlin is certain that the strength of his grasp is a little more than can be considered either polite or human. It's entirely possible that he'll have bruises on his arm tomorrow.
"Come on, then, what? Where? What's going on?"
Despite his questions, he's following along at Arthur's side as they leave the hall together. For a start, the grip on his arm is so firm that he hardly has a choice in the matter. Secondly, this is the Prince of Camelot. Even if he's rather weird and rather annoying, Merlin doesn't have much of a choice when it comes to following his wishes. Thirdly, and most importantly, he's intrigued as hell about how this is all going to play out.
"You," Arthur answers, "have just become my new manservant. You should be proud. It's a very important position."
"Your manservant?" Merlin says. He's certain his voice just squeaked. "Why?"
"Don't worry. It shouldn't be too difficult, even for you."
"I already have a job."
They're walking down the stone corridors now, side by side. Arthur is walking a little closer to him than is really necessary, but he's a prince. Maybe that's what princes do. Merlin's never met one before.
"I'm working for Gaius. I can't work for you as well."
"Then we'll find another person to work for Gaius. He won't mind." I will. Arthur rolls his eyes at him.
It won't be hard. You just have to do as I ask. Clean my armor, help me dress.
Yet, for some reason, you can't do it yourself? Arthur's jaw clenches, and he doesn't answer. He doesn't even glance at Merlin from the corner of his eye. Merlin looks down at his feet, scuffing along the floor.
I don't think I'm the ideal person for this position, he says.
He doesn't want to be a servant to a weird, sniffing prat. That's not what he came here for. And with his magic to be concealed, he thinks that spending so much time near a royal would be simply taunting fate.
I don't care, Arthur says carefully.
They reach what Merlin assumes is his bedroom. It looks large enough for a prince when they enter it, in any case.
I want you where I can keep an eye on you.
Merlin's eyebrows rise. He can't fight the impression that there's something here that he's missing, something big and undoubtedly important. Because Arthur doesn't know him. Arthur doesn't know anything about him. But there's something there in his gaze, something dark and possessive and dangerous that says that Arthur knows all that he needs to.
What?
Merlin asks, possibly a squeak. He does far too much squeaking in Camelot.
Why?
Because there's something different about you, Merlin,
Arthur says, and that's a leer on his face. A leer or a smirk or something equally annoying.
And I'm going to work out what it is.
Merlin gulps, nods, and tries not to think about just how dangerous his life at Camelot has just become.
The First Taste, written by Toes Taste Good and read by Eos Rose. Being a manservant, Merlin decides, is quite possibly a fate worse than death. It takes him roughly 2 days to come to that conclusion. He's certain manservant can't even be a real job. So far, his duties seem to consist of doing whatever Arthur is too lazy or too royal or too smug to do himself. He ends up in the stables, mucking out Arthur's horses. He polishes armor. He cleans clothes and sweeps floors and fetches food and heats water for Arthur's ridiculously frequent baths. And all of that would be bad enough in itself. But, to make matters worse, Arthur has a habit of watching him as he does it. Standing a small distance from the stables, he'd claimed the smell made him gag, Arthur had watched him all day. When Arthur trains with his men, he comes up with tasks that Merlin could do while in viewing range. It's downright creepy, and Gaius does not seem nearly concerned enough when Merlin mentions it to him.
You are his servant, Merlin, he explains while stirring a bubbling pot.
The liquid inside is a disturbing brown-green color. Merlin thinks it's best if he doesn't ask what exactly it is.
You ought to be close to him at all times, in case he needs anything.
There's a strange stress on that last word, and Gaius looks up, catching Merlin's gaze and holding it. Merlin feels that there's some sort of deeper meaning in that look, something important, but it flies over his head.
I'd better go, he sighs. Arthur has started sending his men after me if I'm gone for more than an hour. Arthur's going to drive him mad within a week. Whoever could have predicted that the royal family would be so utterly bonkers?
He supposes that he'll at least have some fun stories to take with him the next time he gets to go home.
Be careful,
Gaius advises. It sounds rather more ominous than Merlin thinks that it ought to, but he waves cheerily and heads back toward Arthur's chambers. His cheerful mood fades within 2 seconds of entering the room. Should have known that it wouldn't last long.
Where on earth have you been? Arthur snaps before the door has even closed behind him. I was visiting Gaius. A dry puff of air fluffs from Arthur's nose. Humph. And if Arthur were not the Prince of all of Camelot, Merlin is certain that the expression on his face right now would be described as pouting. Neck sniffing, near stalking, and now pouting. The more he learns about the prince, the odder he seems.
You should have asked my permission first, Arthur scolds. It isn't right for you to wander off while you're working for me.
But I'm always working for you. No breaks, no stops for lunch unless Arthur remembers that, yes, servants do in fact need to eat. Merlin's not surprised that Arthur forgets sometimes. He's hardly ever actually seen him eat, though he's made to bring food to his chambers regularly. When he takes the plate or bowl away, it is usually in the same condition as it entered the room, but pushed around or played with. Seeing this always makes him want to clip Arthur around the ear and to tell him about the conditions in the rural areas, about how a single bad harvest could starve a family, about the starving poor, about what some men would do for something as simple as that meal. But he is a servant, and Arthur is a prince, so Merlin sticks to his sarcasm and to rolling his eyes behind Arthur's back, and talking to Gwen about it. He's found that Gwen, one of the other servants, is one of the few sane people in this entire place. Complaining about Arthur's odd behavior to her is always met with a knowing smile, as if she understands what he's going through. Come to think of it, Morgana is always in the same area as Gwen. Maybe... Before the thought takes root, he glances towards Arthur to find his sire clicking his fingers at him. Sorry? God, Merlin, you are absolutely insufferable. Arthur complains. Yet, for some reason, you insist on suffering me, Merlin points out, smiling. That's one mystery he still hasn't gotten to the bottom of. What were you just saying? Arthur gives a put-upon sigh. You still haven't polished my armor. We need to go and do that. We... Merlin's fairly certain that the whole point of having a servant is so that Arthur is free to do other, more important things, like picking other necks to sniff and prancing around like a right royal prat. Accompanying Merlin on all of his tasks has to be a waste of time for the prince. But whenever Merlin cares to mention this, he is met with either a scowl or another sigh. Arthur sighs a lot around him. They trudge down to the armory. When they get there, Arthur finds a seat while Merlin finds his armor and is left to kneel on the floor as he works on it. All of this would be so much easier if Arthur would simply leave him alone for a while. A little magic would have done it in no time. But considering the national policy on sorcerers, Merlin isn't willing to try that at all. He quite likes his head being attached to his neck, to be perfectly honest. He'd like it to remain that way. It's not all bad, not really. Despite being an absolute twat, Arthur's actually pretty fun to talk to, and he's certainly fun to listen to as he rants and rambles about various nobles and knights. Merlin is happy to listen to him as he works on polishing this stupid armor. While Arthur is talking about some knight or other, and the scandal surrounding him and an older woman, Merlin takes to sharpening his sword, and it's then that it happens. So stupid, so clumsy, his finger slips and slashes along the blade. Nothing too big and nothing too deep, but it stings like hell. A few drops of blood well up. Merlin curses creatively beneath his breath and screws his eyes shut, waiting for the initial sting of pain to fade. And Arthur has stopped talking. The armory is silent. Merlin's body tenses, though he doesn't know why. A long, hidden, and forgotten instinct is screaming danger at him. He opens his eyes slowly, raising his head. Arthur is right there, kneeling right on the ground beside him, and he looks just like he had on the first day that they'd bumped into each other in the castle's corridors. He looks down at Merlin's hand, focused on nothing but that. But Merlin can see his eyes. Black, pitch black, and hungry. "Sire?" Merlin breathes cautiously. Arthur reaches out to hold on to his wrist. Merlin feels certain that his pulse is racing ridiculously fast. "There's nothing wrong here," he tells himself, but he doesn't believe it. Not for a second. "You're bleeding," Arthur says. His voice sounds distant, far away. Merlin can't take his eyes from Arthur's face, but he can hardly feel the throb of pain from his finger any longer. "It's just a scratch," he says. "Nothing to worry about. Can you let go of me now?" Arthur's grip remains. It's freakishly strong. What does Camelot feed its knights anyway? It has to be some sort of bizarre strength enhancer, because even when Merlin struggles to tug his arm out of Arthur's grasp, it doesn't work. Arthur's eyes stay greedily focused on his finger, on the few drops of blood dribbling down. "Arthur, this isn't funny," Merlin says, as if using his name might jolt him out of whatever strange mood he's in. It doesn't work. If anything, well, Merlin would be inclined to say that it makes things worse, a lot worse, because Arthur draws his hand up until it touches his lips. He doesn't kiss Merlin's fingertip. That would be the wrong word. He runs it over his bottom lip, leaving a faint coat of blood there that he follows with his tongue. His black eyes shiver closed. And then, oh God, then he lets out a moan that makes Merlin's breath catch in his chest. It's a deep, rumbling thing, the kind of sound that Merlin's never heard before, and that he's certain he's not supposed to hear from Arthur. Not caused by him, and not by smearing blood over his lip. He's not even struggling to get his hand back anymore, leaving it loose and limp in Arthur's grasp. Arthur's tongue runs over Merlin's fingertip, teasing the open cut. His hand is covered with dirt and dust and metal from his chores of the day, so Merlin knows he must taste awful. But Arthur gives another of those moans. It's enough to make Merlin ignore the stinging ache in his finger. He's watching Arthur, unable to move, but when the stinging pain becomes something much sharper and stronger, he can't help but yelp. His eyes flare and he pulls his hand back, breaking that supernatural grip upon his wrist with burning ease. Arthur yelps too, tumbling backwards and pulling his hands to his chest as if he'd just plunged them into boiling water. Looking down at his finger, Merlin can see another cut on it next to the one that had started this nonsense. This one's deeper, messier, and more painful. Even staring at it, it takes Merlin a moment or two to realize what just happened. Arthur bit him. He looks up to find Arthur staring at him, his eyes like the night sky. Black, so black, but different now. There is the faintest touch of gold upon them, something warm and magical. "Go," Arthur rasps. His voice doesn't sound like his own. "Go and find Gaius. Get him to fix your finger." He's breathing heavily. After the words have been spoken, he grits his teeth and clenches his hands, as if he's in pain. Although Merlin knows that his finger is not wounded badly enough to need a physician's attention,
he takes the opportunity to scramble clumsily to his feet. At first he tries to pick up the armor still sitting on the floor, but Arthur shakes his head and waves at the door. "Go," he insists, as if he isn't sure what will happen if Merlin doesn't leave soon. Merlin's never counted himself a coward, but he leaves as quickly as he can. There's a cold sweat upon his skin, something he only notices once he's halfway to Gaius's chambers. His hands are shaking. Neck sniffing, now finger tasting. Holding his bleeding finger to his chest, Merlin knows that he needs to work out what's going on. And soon.
Camelot's Worst Kept Secret. Written by Toes Taste Good and read by Eos Rose. When Gwen bumps into Merlin on his way to Gaius's, her face slips from pleased to distraught with the sort of speed that would make an archer jealous. At first Merlin worries he's done something wrong, but then he notices the way she's staring at his bleeding finger. His spirits sink. If finger-sucking is going to be a Camelot tradition, he wishes he'd had a little forewarning first. "You're bleeding," Gwen observes. With a cautious nod of his head, Merlin confirms that fact.
"I cut myself with Arthur's sword. You wouldn't believe the..."
"Has Arthur seen you?" Gwen asks urgently, cutting across his words. He doesn't think she's ever done that before.
"Seen me? Of course he's seen me. He was there. He went a bit mental, to be honest."
Gwen's frown deepens and she takes him by the wrist, popping her head inside the door of the nearest room. Upon finding it empty, she leads him inside. "Stay here, I'll fetch some bandages."
"Arthur said to go to Gaius."
"I don't think that's a good idea," she says, shaking her head. "It would spread your scent further."
"My..."
Merlin cuts himself off, eyebrows raised. "This place is mad. Mad."
"Gwen, what's going on?"
"Just wait here," she tells him, "and try not to bleed on anything." She leaves him, rushing quickly out of the room. He lets out a long breath and looks around. He can't even tell what this room is for, if indeed it is for anything at all. The castle seems full of rooms and corridors that are utterly pointless, yet stuffed full with furniture and decor that cost more than Merlin's life is worth. This particular room is dusty and dark. It makes him wish for a flame to light the room and hold back the shadows. The only illumination that comes is thinning sunlight from outside. Even that is bound to fade soon, once the sun sets. Gwen returns with a bucket of water, a cloth, and some bandages.
"That's sort of overkill, isn't it, Gwen? It's just a cut."
She's acting as if he's severed his finger, so he holds it up for her as if to display that his fingertip is still firmly attached. It makes her sigh at him. They both sit on the dusty furniture, and she takes his hand, using the dampened cloth to wipe the drying blood away. It makes him wince, and he struggles not to let himself pull away from her gentle grasp.
"It's not just a cut," she sighs. "Not with you, not for Arthur."
The way she says it makes Merlin's insides squirm uncomfortably, makes his instincts tell him that something is very, very not right here. Everyone else seems to know something that he doesn't, so he doesn't try to stop himself when he asks, "What's wrong with Arthur?" That's not a respectful way to talk about their future king, even behind his back, but it's not as if Merlin is especially respectful to his face either. And it's not as if, with all of his bizarre antics, Arthur has done very much to gain Merlin's respect either. Not yet. He'll withhold judgment. Gwen's eyes narrow as she looks up at him, the cloth stealing in its process of cleaning him up.
"You don't know?" she asks.
"Don't know what?"
"Arthur didn't tell you."
She looks away.
"Or Gaius, at the very least."
"Nobody's told me anything. What am I supposed to have been told?"
She closes her eyes, and there's a long, stretching pause that makes Merlin's skin itch with tension.
It's complicated. I don't know what to say.
Say anything. Tell me why Arthur decided it was a good idea to suck my finger once I'd cut it. That would be nice.
He drank from you?
She sounds scandalized. He supposes it is a fairly odd thing for Arthur to do, especially to a servant. Looking down at his newly cleaned finger, she examines the twin cuts, one inflicted by the sword and one by Arthur's freakishly sharp tooth.
He bit you?
Only a little, Merlin mumbles. Gwen shakes her head in disappointment and sets about wrapping his finger in the bandage she'd brought with her.
Do you remember the war Camelot fought 3 years ago?
Vaguely, Merlin says. It didn't really affect my village all that much. Why would it? They heard the stories and the tales, but the war seemed far away and had ended quickly, overshadowed by so many more important things. The politics of the court meant very little to them.
It was bad, Gwen says. Here, I mean. We nearly lost everything. Bayard and his men managed to kidnap the prince and Lady Morgana right from the castle, and when they came back...
She falls silent as she finishes bandaging his wound. For such a pair of tiny cuts, he's ended up with an obnoxiously large wad covering his finger. He'll be finding it difficult to use buttons or tie laces because of it.
What happened? He prompts gently. They were different. Changed.
She looks down at the table as she folds up the remainder of the bandages.
I shouldn't be the one to tell you this, Merlin.
No one else is going to, apparently. What would change someone enough that they'd develop a habit of sucking people's fingers? Come on, Gwen. Tell me. It sounds serious.
It is. She wouldn't meet his eyes anymore. He's sure that can't be a good sign. It's Camelot's worst-kept secret. I assumed you already knew. You must know.
Gwen, please.
They're vampires. She meets his eyes now. They were turned into vampires while they were captive. I think it was supposed to turn them against Uther, but it didn't work.
Vampires? Merlin says, as if to check that he's heard her right. Vampires. And isn't that ridiculous? Really, it isn't. He has magic running through his veins, and he can make objects float and summon lightning from the sky, so vampires, they're really not that out there.
Are you sure? It's why Uther hates magic so much, Merlin.
But surely we'd know if the future king was a vampire. It's not exactly something that can stay secret for long, is it?
Instead of answering him directly, Gwen reaches for the sleeve of her dress. She pulls it up, allowing the yellow material to wrinkle around her elbow. On her arm there is a mass of bandages, just like the one on Merlin's finger. As he watches, she unwinds them, revealing healing marks upon her dark skin. He can see the delicate marks of sharp teeth, several of them.
It's real, she says.
Arthur did that?
Her head shakes.
Morgana.
He can't take his eyes from the healing marks. They are in varying degrees of healing. Some look a lot older than others. There's one that looks fresh and painful.
Does it hurt?
Gwen neither nods nor shakes her head.
It's strange. It hurts afterwards.
But not during.
No.
Her smile is a distant and mysterious thing.
Not during. Definitely not during.
Well, that's encouraging. Because if Gwen is Morgana's handmaiden and has services such as that required of her, then Merlin doesn't want to think too in-depth about Arthur's motivations in having him assigned to be his manservant.
It would at least explain all the sniffing.
I should talk to Arthur, shouldn't I? Merlin sighs reluctantly.
He's very rarely dreaded a conversation quite this much. "Maybe in the morning," Gwen suggests. "I'll ask Morgana if she'll look in on him tonight."
"Thank you."
Merlin looks down at his bandaged finger, his mind swirling with the weight of so much new information. He won't sleep tonight. He'll raid Gaius's books or even the library if he can sneak in. Thanks to Gwen, at least now he knows what to look for.
"You're late," is the first thing that Arthur says to him when he enters his chambers the following morning.
"And you're already dressed," Merlin counters with a frown.
"I'm already dressed because you are late.
Cause and effect, Merlin," Arthur answers loftily. Standing near the doorway, Merlin observes him for a moment or two. Arthur is near the window, and there is a bright stream of sunshine pouring upon him, the light causing his hair to shine like gold.
"You're standing in the sun," Merlin points out. "Your observational skills are truly remarkable," Arthur says.
"Now grab my boots. I want them cleaned today."
"Which ones?"
"All of them." Arthur smiles smugly. "I'm training the men all day. You can do it at the side of the field."
"Or," Merlin suggests, "I could actually get on with something useful. There must be something else I can do. Something in the castle."
He knows Arthur won't agree to that. After what Gwen told him last night, he's certain of it. But he can't stop prodding anyway. Can't stop watching to see how he reacts. And he sees it, the frown of displeasure and the curl of Arthur's lip before he shakes his head insistently.
"Sometimes I think you forget that you are the servant here, Merlin, not the master. Guess what that means?"
Arthur looks up, frown gone, smirk present. But Merlin doesn't guess.
"It means that you have to do what I say."
"Even when what you say is utterly ridiculous?"
"Especially then. It shows loyalty."
Merlin crosses his arms over his chest, trying to look half as physically intimidating as Arthur does effortlessly. He's fairly sure that he fails, but he knows that he has exactly the words that are needed to wipe the smug expression off of Arthur's face.
"Gwen told me last night, you know, about the vampire thing."
He has to admit that it doesn't have quite the reaction that he'd been hoping for. He'd imagined that Arthur would take a shocked step backwards, that the color would drain from his face, and that he'd gasp, or maybe shriek, in horror. The real reaction is something of a disappointment. Arthur shrugs one shoulder, and he stays right on the spot.
"Good for her? You know, Merlin, you don't need to recount every detail of each conversation you have to me. I appreciate the gesture, but..."
He cuts himself off before Merlin has to do it for him, but the look of sudden realization that dawns on his face instead is not much of an improvement. It's like the clear sky before the storm comes crashing in. As stunning as it is, Merlin knows that what follows is going to be much worse.
"You didn't know?" Arthur asks. "All this time, you didn't know what I was. What I am, rather."
No. Arthur gapes at him in amazement for a few moments, his blue eyes wide. That's the shock that Merlin had wanted, but it's definitely over the wrong topic. He'd wanted Arthur to be stunned at his knowledge, not at his previous lack of it.
"So what on earth have you thought I've been doing all this time?" Arthur asks. "Did you think I was sniffing you for the hell of it?"
"I thought you were just being you," Merlin says. The raising of Arthur's eyebrow makes him add. "Being a prat, I mean." Arthur shrugs, the words seeming to bounce off of him as if he's wearing armor.
"Well, now you know the truth. And I presume that means you're going to be more careful. We can't have a repeat of yesterday's fiasco."
"Yeah, about that."
"What?"
"What happened?" That's finally enough to make Arthur flounder, but he recovers himself with annoying ease. Taking Merlin's wrist, he leads him towards the large wooden table in his room. They sit down in seats that are closer to each other than they really need to be. Arthur's grip on his wrist doesn't loosen, and he shows no intention of pulling back any time soon. "Merlin," Arthur says reasonably. Merlin isn't much in the mood for reason, though, not when he remembers the bite marks on Gwen's arm. "You're going to drink me, aren't you?" God, he doesn't want to become the prince's lunch. That's not why he came to Camelot. Admittedly, his noble quest in coming to Camelot was more along the lines of nobly leaving his village before he got into trouble there, but that's far from the point. The point being that being Arthur's servant is frustrating enough without having to be a blood donor as well, and Merlin certainly intends on telling him as much. However, he finds that Arthur is already shaking his head. "If I was going to do so, I would have done it already. Stop looking so scared." "I wasn't scared."
"You were terrified."
"Well, you did suck my blood yesterday."
"I sucked your finger. That's hardly life-threatening."
Arthur's hand is still holding on to Merlin's wrist, but his grip is soft now, gentle. Despite the derision in his voice, his thumb is stroking the tender skin on the inside of Merlin's wrist. It's soothing, though Merlin doesn't think that he needs to be soothed. His pulse is racing, and he doubts it's purely because of the danger of being this close to a vampire.
"Lady Morgana drinks from Gwen," Merlin says. "I saw the marks."
"That's different. Morgana can control it better than I can, and..."
"Control what better?"
"The hunger." Arthur's jaw clenches. His blue eyes meet Merlin's gaze, disturbing in their seriousness.
"I wouldn't be able to stop. Once I start, I can't pull back, and with you, I don't think even Morgana could pry me off."
"You'd kill me," Merlin says, his mouth forming the words without conscious thought. Arthur quirks a smile that is utterly devoid of humor and lets go of Merlin's wrist abruptly.
"And that's why I will not be snacking on you anytime soon," he says. "Now hurry up and get my boots. We haven't got all day."
If Merlin had been hoping for easier treatment once Arthur's secret was out in the open, he's clearly set to be disappointed. He scrambles to his feet from his chair, rushing to do as he's told while being overconscious of Arthur impatiently watching him. With all the information that's been thrust at him, he can at least rest assured that he will have something to occupy his thoughts while he carries out the mind-numbing tasks that will occupy his day. Full Moon, written by Toes Taste Good and read by Eos Rose. Merlin hasn't slept well since all this nonsense about Arthur, Morgana, and vampires was revealed. It's not because he's scared, because he's not, honestly. Arthur may be a prat, but he isn't a killer. But it's because of the dreams. Muggy like a heat wave, the dreams press in around him whenever he closes his eyes. It's nothing coherent, but there's sex and there's blood, and there's that endless sense of complete belonging. Behind closed eyes, Arthur lays him out on his bed and claims him in ways that no good country boy should dream about, then sinks sharp fangs into the pale skin of his neck and drinks until his eyes shine with gold. And really, Merlin is quite absolutely and completely certain that that is not an appropriate way for a manservant to think about his lord. Controlling his dreams is thoroughly impossible, however, and while Merlin is certain that he in some way can blame Arthur for all of this, it isn't Arthur that has to struggle to stay awake every night, for fear of what might await him there. Fear probably isn't the right word. Maybe worry or frustration or annoyance would fit better. Yes, annoyance. Merlin likes that one. In sleep, Merlin rolls over to lie on his front on the bed, his arm curling beneath his stomach in a position that will probably make his wrist ache tomorrow. In his dream, Arthur is there with him and pressed against his back. There is cold breath on the nape of his neck and Arthur's hands on his hips, and there is no option, none at all, other than to hand himself over entirely to his lord. And even in his dreams, Merlin knows that that level of obedience, coming from him, is utterly ridiculous. That's probably why his mind promptly boots him out of the dream and, groaning, Merlin opens his eyes into groggy consciousness. It's still dark outside his window with a ripe moon providing the only light. He is absolutely certain that it ought to be a criminal offense to be woken up at this hour. Pondering whether or not it would be feasible to have Arthur put in the stocks for life, for plaguing his dreams like this, Merlin flops onto his back in the struggle to find a comfortable position and fall back to sleep, and immediately finds himself staring at a figure standing at the foot of his bed. A very, very Arthur-like figure. Merlin rubs his hand over his sleep-blurred eyes. Arthur is still standing there, even once his vision starts to clear, though he has started to look a little sheepish. "Arthur?" Merlin mumbles, sleep-sodden. It possibly comes out sounding more like, but considering the time and the situation, Merlin thinks that's an admirable effort.
"It's me," Arthur confirms after clearing his throat.
"I know," Merlin agrees. He sits up, or tries to, before deciding that's far too much work.
"Why? Do you need something?"
"No, nothing. Go back to sleep." Well, doing that is really impossible with Arthur standing there. Merlin isn't sure if it's his princeliness, his vampireness, or his prattishness that makes sleep an impossibility. Probably a mix of all three. A royal vampiric prat is in his bedroom, and Merlin knows for sure that he won't be going to sleep again until he's gone.
"No, really. Sire, what is it?"
He makes a move to throw the covers back, screwing up all of his courage to face the cold in order to do so, but he stops when he hears a low, insistent growl rumble from Arthur's chest.
"Lie back down,"
Arthur insists, and Merlin obeys, eyes wide and hair messy.
"Now what?"
Arthur scowls at him, eyes narrowing in the moonlight, but at least he isn't growling again. There's something about that sound that is designed to chill the blood. It is a sound that is a reminder that humans aren't as close to the top of the food chain as they like to believe.
"Move over," Arthur says once he's done with scowling.
"Move where?"
"To the side of the bed. I want to lie down."
"It's not very comfortable."
"I don't care."
I wriggle.
"I've seen that."
It's Merlin's turn to scowl now. It's not fair for Arthur to have crept in here while he was sleeping, and then to make fun of his sleeping habits. He's sure that's cheating, or something like it.
"Just move over to the other side of the bed, Merlin. I'm the prince. Do as I say."
"It's a very narrow bed," Merlin grumbles as he rolls over onto his side. He can hear the sound of Arthur pulling off his boots, but his eyelids droop and he doesn't bother to offer to help like a good servant probably would.
"You're not going to eat me, are you?"
he asks, slurring. Arthur shoves his shoulder. Merlin's not sure if that's a satisfying answer, but then Arthur lies down snug behind him, and he doesn't really mind anymore. Arthur's arm wraps around his waist and holds him snugly against his chest, and Merlin can already feel himself drifting off to sleep, even though he knows that having a neck-sniffing vampire in his bed ought to be a reason to stay wide awake and defensive. When he wakes in the morning, his room is empty. The sun is shining into his bedroom through the window. It is already high and bright enough that Merlin can tell he's slept in far too late. For once, Gaius hasn't been through to roughly awaken him. He blinks blearily and wonders if, seeing as he's already late for his duties, he could afford to simply lie here until someone comes to chase him out of bed. Then he thinks of Gaius's disapproving scowl and the mocking he will probably receive at Arthur's hands, and he sighs and sits up. There is no sign that Arthur was in his room at all last night, and Merlin frowns. Maybe another dream? It's hard to tell.
"Ah, Merlin," Gaius says when he eventually gets dressed and stumbles out of his bedroom.
He tenses up and waits for the inevitable lecture about his lazy habits, but it doesn't come. Merlin's beginning to get the impression that nothing in this castle will ever happen like he expects it to. Arthur came by this morning. He said to tell you that you have the day off.
I have what?
A day off, Merlin. He doesn't wish for you to attend on him today. Gaius looks at him sternly, as if he's about to suggest that Merlin help him all day instead, but Merlin isn't focusing on that impending doom. He's trying to work out why on earth Arthur would have had such a sudden burst of philanthropy.
"You're sure he said that?" he asks. "Completely sure?"
"I'm absolutely certain," Gaius confirms. He catches Merlin's gaze and holds it. "It's the full moon tonight."
And, ah, there it is, one of those mysterious little inferences that Merlin knows ought to mean something to him, just by the way that Gaius nods. He sighs.
"I don't know any of this vampire stuff, Gaius. You need to actually tell me about it. I thought the full moon was a werewolf thing."
Gaius's sigh is one of disappointment, and it's a sigh that Merlin knows he will be well used to before long.
"Really, Merlin, considering that you serve under a vampire, it might do you some good to do a little research."
"I did," Merlin protests, but he finds himself blushing when he thinks of the old books he'd managed to locate about vampires. They're a very odd subject. The descriptions of vampires in the books had been of sexualized, dark predators preying on innocent young women, and he can't think of Arthur like that. It makes him laugh whenever he tries.
It wasn't all that useful.
"The full moon is a draw on the creatures inside them," Gaius says. He clears his throat uncomfortably. "Seeing as Arthur has, well, fixated upon you in particular."
And now Gaius is blushing too. God, Merlin thinks that he could have quite happily gone his entire life without having to have any blush-worthy conversations with Gaius. He bites his bottom lip, then says, "I might go and ask Gwen, actually. She has, you know, first-hand information about it, right?"
Gaius perks up immediately.
"Right, marvelous idea. Just make sure to give Arthur's chambers a wide berth today."
"Of course," Merlin agrees. He all but runs from the room, undecided about whether that was better or worse than the time that his mother had tried to sit him down and talk to him about girls, birds, and bees. There's a lightness in his walk and a lack of tension upon his shoulders as he walks through the castle's corridors. A day off. A day without making Arthur's bed for him, or polishing his armor, or bringing him food, or anything else. Freedom. It feels nice. Unusual, but nice. Maybe Morgana can be wheedled into giving Gwen the day off as well. They could go into the town and explore. Merlin hasn't had much of a chance to do that for himself, in between neck-sniffing and finger-biting adventures. He knocks but doesn't wait before entering, and soon discovers why, exactly, he should have waited for them to answer the door. Gwen and Morgana sit on Morgana's bed together with Gwen's back resting against Morgana's chest. It would look peaceful and comfortable. There's a happy smile on Gwen's face, but Morgana has Gwen's wrist raised to her mouth, and red blood dribbles down Gwen's forearm. Gwen's breathing comes in short, shallow puffs, and there are spots of pink coloring her cheeks. Merlin says, and he wishes that something more intelligent would come. Morgana looks up to the door, her lips stained red and her eyes pitch black. She looks so inhuman in her otherworldly beauty that Merlin is rooted to the spot. He knows that he ought to leave the room, slam the door behind him, and find somewhere to hide for the remainder of the day, but he can't move a single inch.
"Oh," Gwen says. She sounds mortified. Pulling away from Morgana, she reaches for a pile of cloths they'd had resting beside them, prepared, waiting. She presses it against her wrist.
"Merlin, what?"
Arthur, he gave me the day off. I was just coming to see if you were free. I should have knocked. I really should have knocked and waited. Knocked and waited. I'm sorry. It's fine, Merlin, Morgana says, even though it's not, even though it can't be, even though Merlin's trying to work out if he knows a spell that might cause a hole to open up and swallow him from embarrassment. There had been something all too intimate about that. All too personal. Gwen, you can take the rest of the day off, too, if you'd like. I should go and see to Arthur anyway. Seeing to Arthur should have been Merlin's job, and he can't help the faintest frown that forms on his face. Morgana's eyes are still black, however, and the way she moves doesn't seem quite right. Too fast, too fluid, too elegant. Merlin decides to hold his tongue, and he looks down at the ground as she passes him. As she walks out the door, passing by closely, she breathes in deeply and a smile curls on her blood-red lips. I'm really sorry, Merlin says the second the door has closed. I had no idea. It's almost midday. Surely that's too early to be drinking blood. Maybe. He doesn't know. It's okay, Gwen says, though she's still blushing as she sits on the edge of the bed, holding the cloth tightly against her wrist. Really, it's okay. We should have locked the door or, I don't know, put a sign up. Merlin smiles sheepishly. It's no wonder they wouldn't have thought to do that. Most servants knew better than to barge openly through a closed door. Are you okay? That looks sore. Bleeding wounds generally do. Gwen peels back the white cloth pressed to her wrist to take a look at the marks underneath, but presses it back firmly when it seems that the bleeding hasn't yet stopped. It's all right, she says. It hurts a little, but it'll fade soon. They heal quickly, you know. Guys thinks it's something in the saliva. Oh. Merlin isn't quite sure what else to say in response to that little gobbet of information. He's finding this entire situation a little too surreal. Actually, I wanted to ask you some questions about this. The vampire stuff, I mean. I tried talking to Gaius about it, but he... Gwen smiles. Yes, he gets sort of flustered, doesn't he? She says. Is he always like that? Pretty much, she confirms, nodding. I don't think the books in the library help. I haven't read any myself, but Morgana likes to quote them, clearly written by someone who's never met a vampire in their life. Merlin looks down at the ground and scuffs the stone floor with his foot, determined not to start blushing like Gaius had. He clears his throat and tries to banish all of those passages from the library books out of his mind. He'd thought that there had been something a little too ridiculously graphic about them. But, yeah, Gaius was talking about the full moon or something, like that's why I don't have to work today. And Arthur was in my room last night. I think he was, anyway. It's all a bit fuzzy. The moon affects their hunger, Gwen says. It makes it stronger, but it's more than that, much more. They're drawn to their... She pauses, frowning as she hunts for the right word. Merlin would help, would offer some suggestions, but his mind is blank. They're special people more than ever. It makes it difficult to stay away. Special people? Merlin repeats. Gwen meets his gaze and holds it without wavering, and it's him that looks away first with a hearty groan. You're about to tell me that's me, aren't you? She cringes awkwardly, but nods. I'm afraid so. There's something about you that Arthur's latched onto. Can't we make him, you know, unlatch? It doesn't really work like that. Gwen is smiling sympathetically when he looks back up at her. Don't worry. He won't make you do anything. Merlin snorts and thinks, I'd like to see him try. His magic had worked to push Arthur away last time. He's certain it will work in the future. Why me? He asks, though maybe that's something that he ought to direct at Arthur instead of at Gwen. The idea of having this conversation with Arthur, however, is utterly ridiculous. they'd be more likely to discuss how chilly hell is at this time of year than anything actually important. They don't know. It's an instinctual thing. With me and Morgana, it just happened. She spotted me across the courtyard one morning and then... Gwen's smile as she thinks back to that moment is possibly the sweetest thing that Merlin has ever seen. When he thinks about his own first encounter with Arthur, he feels nothing like it. No fuzzy warmth settles in his heart. It's hard to think nostalgically about being shoved against a wall and sniffed like a particularly good pie. Gwen clears her throat and checks on her wrist again. Apparently it satisfies her this time, because she sets about simply covering the wound now. "So what do you want to do today?" she asks. "We've both got the day off, after all. It should be fun." "Why don't you show me around the city? I've been here for a week, and I'm still getting lost." "I've been here all my life, and I still get lost," Gwen counters with a smile, before the smile fades as she seems worried. "Not that I don't think you'll be able to find your feet. Of course not. You're smart. Oh, not that I'm implying that if you get lost you're not..." "Gwen, it's fine," Merlin says. "Really." He can't stop smiling indulgently at her. "Today is going to be a very good day off." They get lost, of course. By the time they find their way through the tiny back streets to the castle, the sun is beginning to droop tiredly. The sky is dyed pink and orange as if paint has spilt all over it, and in the distance as they approach the gates, Merlin can see Morgana and Arthur waiting for them. "Uh-oh," he says as he leans over to talk into Gwen's ear. "Do you think we're in trouble?" "You do know that we can hear you," Arthur says, raising his voice to a near shout to be heard over the distance. "Enhanced hearing," Gwen says quietly. "Bugger. Just his luck." "And yes, of course you're in trouble. Where have you been?" "He sounds like my mother," Merlin grouches. When they reach the castle gates, Morgana is at Gwen's side in an instant, their fingers tangling together, and Arthur's arm slides over Merlin's shoulders. It's a struggle not to tense up immediately, and Arthur's grip is light, as if he's expecting him to pull away. Merlin doesn't. He isn't sure why not. It would be the sane thing to do, after all. But he doesn't. Instead, he smiles when Arthur's fingers brush against the side of his neck, and Arthur says, "I am nothing like your mother," breathing the words quietly into his ear in a way that makes Merlin shiver. "Not unless Merlin's mother is secretly a selfish little prince," Morgana agrees. She laughs and dances out of the way when Arthur scowls at her, and together the four of them begin to walk into the castle as the sun is setting. The girls walk ahead of them, leaving Merlin and Arthur to trail in their wake at a slow and leisurely pace. "You should sleep in my room tonight," Arthur says decisively, as if he has just worked out the cure for all illnesses. "Your bed is awful." "So that was really you?" Merlin asks. "I thought I was dreaming." Arthur's laughter snorts air through his nose. "I realize I'm a dream come true, Merlin, but..." Merlin's elbow nudging his ribs shuts him up before he goes any further. "Don't be such a prat," he tells him, "or I'll stay down in my room tonight." "And then I'll have to creep into your dreams again and sleep on that awful bed," Arthur muses. "I know it must be a tough decision for you, sire," Merlin says. Arthur sighs in annoyance, but his arm is still around Merlin's shoulders, even though they bump into each other a little as they walk through the castle's large wooden doors and into the stone corridors. Morgana and Gwen are getting further and further ahead of them now. "I suppose I could try to rein in my... prattishness?" Arthur rolls his eyes at him. "My natural irritation with you?" Merlin shrugs. He could press the point a little further, tease Arthur, and say that he'll only come and stay with him if he admits that Merlin is actually rather good at his job. But the moon is full and heavy in the sky outside. "All right, then," he says, Can I go and grab my stuff from my room? He doesn't know exactly what to take when you're sleeping in the prince's bedroom. He can't imagine that it's at all like when he and Will used to spend the night in each other's houses, staying up past midnight and sneaking food from the kitchen. Arthur's arm slips reluctantly from around his shoulders. "Don't take too long," he says, "and I know it's difficult for someone as airheaded as you, but try not to get lost." "If I do, I'm sure you'll scold me for it, Mother," Merlin teases, moving away from Arthur in the direction of Gaius's chambers. "You're insufferable," Arthur yells after him, and Merlin finds himself smiling all the way through the corridors, even after Arthur has faded from sight. He feels light, every inch of him, and he feels like he might glow. He should be asking more questions than he is. Maybe he even ought to think about going home and forgetting all this madness, but he can't. The need to be here, near Arthur, itches at him in the same way it seems to itch at Arthur. It's only been a week so far, but it feels like the start of forever.
Listening to Dragons is Bad for Your Health. Written by Toes Taste Good and read by Eos Rose. He wakes up, comfortable and well-rested, to the feel of a cold nose pressed to the skin of his neck. In the darkness, Merlin blinks. There is moonlight creeping in through the windows around the edges of the heavy curtains, but it does little to light the room. The candles were blown out hours ago, and the room no longer even smells of their smoke. He swallows. The bed is so soft and comfortable that he knows that it is not his. He remembers the invitation to stay in Arthur's bedroom. He remembers staying up long into the night, talking to Arthur as no servant ought to talk with his master until he was so tired that Arthur harassed and scolded him until he slipped beneath warm, thick bedsheets to find sleep. Merlin's breath stutters to a stop on the inhale as he feels Arthur's hand on his hip. It is cold, so cold, as if he's been standing outside for hours. When he swallows, he wonders if this is how Arthur's skin always feels. There's a rush of strange anticipation in his belly when he realizes that he wants the opportunity to find out. Arthur's face is pressed close to his neck, and Merlin can hear the way he's breathing heavily. It's right by his ear, and while Merlin knows now that Arthur's little neck-sniffing habit is a bad, dangerous one, and not something to be laughed at, he can't help smiling. "Arthur, I'm awake," he tells him. If he'd thought that that would make Arthur pull back, hopefully embarrassed, he soon finds that he's very much mistaken. Arthur only grunts in response and doesn't move at all. Merlin's attempt to pull away is met only with the tightening of Arthur's hand on his hip. It's painful, and he stifles a whimper by biting down hard on his tongue. "Arthur, let me go," he says. He gives an awkward laugh, though the tension that strikes through him by instinct says that this is no joke. "This isn't funny. Stop being such a prat." "Stay still," Arthur orders when Merlin tries to struggle out of his grasp. His hand tightens so much on Merlin's hip that it feels like there will be a dark, painful bruise there for days. "Don't struggle. It makes it harder." "Good," Merlin snaps. He tries to elbow him, but only succeeds in twitching his arm a little. "I want it to be harder. I'm not going to lie here and be your midnight snack." Arthur sighs. The breath tickles, cold, over Merlin's skin. "I mean it makes resisting this harder, struggling. It makes the hunger stronger." "Oh," Merlin whispers. Belatedly, Gaius's warnings ring in his ears about avoiding Arthur during the full moon. He curses under his breath and screws his eyes shut. Arthur's hand still has not relaxed its grip. "So, what are we going to do?" "Wait for it to pass?" Arthur suggests. "Do you think it will soon?" "All I'm thinking about right now is how good your blood will taste," Arthur confesses.
The sound of his voice is enough to make Merlin shiver, and that can't be fair. Shiver-worthy voices can't be part of the package with vampires as well, can they? I don't think that'll pass anytime soon. So what do we do? I'm sure someone will come to find us in the morning when I don't appear in court, Arthur says loftily. Hopefully that will be enough to distract me. That's your plan? Wait like this until morning comes and someone might distract you? Merlin huffs an angry sigh of air. You're useless. I don't see you coming up with anything. I'm thinking, Merlin scowls. Coming here had clearly been a bad idea. A very, very bad idea. You should have warned me about all this, you know. I sent you away from the castle for a day. For anyone with a little more sense than you, Merlin, that would have been more than warning enough. With every word, Arthur's cold lips brush against his neck like a promise. Merlin is trying not to shiver again. He is really, really trying. Now be quiet. Why? Because you're being an idiot. And that makes you hungry? That makes me want to shut you up, Arthur says darkly. So we'll just lie here then? Merlin asks after swallowing hard. He can't make himself be quiet, not now. His body is as tight as a bowstring about to snap, and he gets the feeling that snapping in Arthur's presence right now would be an extremely bad idea, possibly the stupidest thing he's ever done. That's the plan, Arthur agrees. You could try to go to sleep again. As if I'm going to sleep when there's a vampire about to gnaw on my throat, Merlin hisses at him. Arthur's hand clenches on his hip again, enough to make Merlin squeak. I would not gnaw on your throat. I would bite your neck. Once. It's a lot cleaner. Is that supposed to be comforting? You won't make a mess of the prince's bed. You ought to be pleased. Arthur presses his lips against the fragile pulse point of Merlin's neck. He lingers there while Merlin counts the beating of his heart and tells himself stubbornly that he can defend himself. He can and he will and he has before. He has nothing to be afraid of from a vampire. He's scarier than Arthur could even anticipate being. Even as he tells himself that, he has a bloody hard time actually believing it. Near-death experiences, or nearly being eaten ones, for that matter, have a tendency of denting self-confidence. I don't want to kill you, Arthur says between gritted teeth. His words are muffled against Merlin's neck. There's something we agree on, then. I'd rather you didn't kill me, too. I don't think just waiting is going to work, Arthur admits reluctantly. He makes a strange sound in the back of his throat. Merlin is terribly suspicious that it might be a growl. Should I try and leave? I'll probably chase you, Arthur says. Merlin doesn't understand how this works, how any of this works. Arthur talks as if he is hardly in control of his own actions, as if he is merely an observer of what he will do, but it's Arthur's hand that holds him in place and Arthur's mouth upon his neck in the darkness. We could shout for help? I'd rather not, Arthur admits. I think I'd try and kill them, too. This is useless, Merlin sighs. I refuse to die here just in case you can't control yourself. I'm thinking. Must be hard for you. Merlin glances through the dark at the door by only flicking his gaze in the general direction. His head doesn't move. It's far, but not too far. Considering his options, he is dismayed to find that there are relatively few. Stay here and probably die a bloody death, or run for the door and probably die a bloody death. Neither, he has to say, sounds particularly appealing. Arthur, it's okay. I won't hurt you. I would never let myself do that, Merlin. It's a lovely sentiment, and perhaps it truly is heartfelt, but Merlin doesn't know if he can lay his life on the possibility that Arthur might be able to restrain himself from killing him, from drinking from a servant, who in the hierarchy of the castle means very little at all to anyone but the court physician, whose power was negligible. That isn't a bet he feels confident enough to make. He takes a deep breath, releases it, then takes another for good measure. He leaps to his feet, the momentary advantage of surprise allowing him to throw Arthur's hand from his hip and scramble forth from the bed. Arthur's mouth falls back from his neck, and the cold floor hits his bare feet. He has so little grip on the ground that he flails, nearly falling, and it's only because of a supernaturally strong grip on his arm that he doesn't hit the ground. He's spun, dizzy, until he hits Arthur's chest. Arthur grabs his other arm as well, holding him with the sort of strength that would make oxen jealous. In the dim light, it's hard to see clearly, but Merlin knows, he knows, that Arthur's eyes are blacker than the pits of hell as they stare right at him, as if they can cut through all pretense of bravery to the core of fear that beats like frantic butterfly wings in his heart. "Arthur," he says, breathes. He needs to talk louder than that. "Arthur, get a grip on yourself. Let go of me." Arthur's lip curls. In the dark, the growl is spine-chilling. It is a sound of hunger and bloodlust, the sort of sound designed for one reason only, to remind humans that they are in no way at the top of the food chain. The snarling growl makes Merlin try to struggle, thrashing and trying to slip out of Arthur's grasp. Pointless. It's so pointless to try, and Arthur is past the point where he's even capable of human speech. There is nothing in those black eyes that will listen to reason or pay attention to anything but the gnawing hunger. He doesn't even flinch when Merlin kicks his shin. It hurts Merlin's bare feet more than it hurts the vampire. Arthur's hand grabs his hair and yanks his head to the side. Merlin doesn't get a chance to fight or argue anymore. His neck is stretched into a clear line, waiting for Arthur's bite. Breath shivers from him. Merlin is faintly aware that he is whimpering, actually whimpering in fear. He doesn't want to die. Not now, not like this, not for nothing. All this death will serve is Arthur's temporary hunger. Lips touch his neck. Cold. Teeth. Before the skin is broken, Merlin feels heat flaring through him instinctually from his toes to his head. It bursts from his chest, shooting outwards. His eyes flash gold, and he drops to the ground when Arthur is thrown backwards. A crash, a crack. Arthur hits the wall on the other side of the room and slumps onto the ground. He sprawls, unmoving. On the ground as well, for a few moments, Merlin doesn't twitch a single muscle. His heart still beats hard enough that it hurts, and in the dim light he can't move his eyes from the outline of Arthur's body, waiting for him to move and attack again. His body still tingles with the hum of raw, fearful power. He doesn't know what he just did. He's never felt anything like that before. Arthur doesn't get up, and while perhaps that means that he ought to take the opportunity to escape, Merlin instead crawls, on hands and knees, to where the prince has fallen. His hands fumble to find his body, and he wishes once more for light. He yells for help when the prince does not move. His skin feels hot when Merlin finds his hand, instead of cold and dull. "I've killed the prince," Merlin thinks for a fractured second, before knocking on the locked door summons him to answer it. It moves in a whirlwind, and he can still feel the magic sparking through his veins as Arthur is rushed down to Gaius's chambers. Gaius, when he answers the door, is freshly awake, but he responds with professionalism that Merlin would have thought impossible. Arthur's skin is pale, so pale he looks like a corpse already. "Is he breathing?" Merlin asks once the guards have gone, the first words he's spoken since he answered the door. Gaius chastises him with a look. "Of course he's not breathing, Merlin," he says. "He's a vampire." "No, he breathes. I know he does." He's felt it before on his skin. He's watched the way Arthur's chest rises and falls peacefully. It's possible that Merlin has paid far more attention to Arthur than he'd realized.
He breathes. He doesn't need to breathe. When he's conscious, I imagine it's a reflex of sorts, Gaius says. He opens Arthur's eyelid to peer at his eye, but whatever he finds makes him frown in displeasure and move away. Glancing to the door, he checks that nobody is around.
What happened, truthfully, this time?
I don't know, Merlin shakes his head. I ran, and he ran at me, and then...
No, not that. I want to know why on earth you were in his room in the first place. I warned you.
There is really very little to be said in response. Sorry, I'm even more of a prat than Arthur is. Won't cut it when his lack of judgment has possibly got rid of the kingdom's only heir. Is there anything I can do?
There must be. Has to be. He caused this. He has to be able to fix it.
There's nothing, Gaius says, distracted. Not yet.
Merlin.
Gaius's lips don't move. Merlin frowns.
What?
I said there's nothing you can do yet, Merlin. If you want to be useful, you can go and fetch some water.
Merlin does as he's told, reluctant to leave the room. The guards positioned by the door won't even glance at him as he passes by, as if he has ceased to exist. He's glad. He wants that to happen. Arthur may be a neck-sniffing, finger-sucking, hungry vampire, but he's the prince. And deep down in that prattish body, Merlin knows there's a noble king waiting to come to the surface. If he survives. If Merlin hasn't just destroyed the kingdom's future.
Merlin.
It comes again as he's walking through the hallways and doesn't stop this time.
Merlin.
Merlin.
It's stupid, but no stupider than anything else he's done since coming to the castle. When he tilts his head curiously and begins to follow the voice. He knows, objectively speaking, that mysterious disembodied voices who know your name are generally to be mistrusted and avoided. The castle hallways are practically deserted. It's far too late at night still for anyone sane to be out and about. Even the guards are scarce by now, drawn towards Gaius's chambers and the prince instead of scattered around the castle.
Merlin,
the voice calls again. It sounds as if it's whispering, but it comes from far away. There's magic to this voice. Power. And when Merlin thinks of Arthur under Gaius's care, skin pale and chest unmoving because of something that he did, he knows that they could do with all the power they could get their hands on, regardless of whether or not the king would approve. Magic caused this mess. Perhaps it's magic that will fix it. He finds that the guards' posts have been abandoned. There's a game that looks like chess or checkers left halfway through. Idly, he changes a few of the pieces. There is a gaping hole waiting for him in the wall, a long passageway down, down, down beneath the castle.
Merlin,
says the voice, and he knows he has to go down there. Knowing he has to do it is not the same as actually wanting to, but after fiddling with the pieces on the guards' game for a little while longer, he knows he can't put it off. Feeling as if he is in a daze as he hears that voice gently guiding him in, he lights a torch and steps into the darkness. The passageway is dark, but not dank. The walls don't feel wet at all, and Merlin supposes he should be thankful for that, if nothing else. Down he goes. Down. When the stairs level out, he walks from a narrow passageway and finds himself in an expansive cave, much larger than he ever would have thought could possibly exist beneath the castle. With so much empty, echoing space, it feels unstable. He swallows. The darkness seems more threatening here, and his torch is so small, so futile, like a single flickering candle. "Is there anybody down here?" he calls. He sounds braver than he feels. He thinks for a moment that he almost sounds like Arthur, but that thought only serves to remind him of why he is here instead of in Arthur's room. "Hello? It's Merlin. You knew my name? A wind rushes through the cave, stirring dead air and upsetting Merlin's torch. He takes a step back on instinct, but it doesn't feel like far enough when he watches the creature in front of him touch down upon the rocks. It's of a size that he's never seen before, and has scarcely even imagined, and its reptilian eyes blink at him in the firelight. Its teeth are larger than his hand, and they're a lot more frightening than Arthur's fangs when his eyes went black ever managed to be. Merlin's eyes widen. "You're a dragon!" It smiles, actually smiles, and inclines its head, a gargantuan nod. "Indeed, and you are Merlin, the warlock." Crap, what's the best way to talk to a dragon? Merlin keeps staring, and wondering if this is yet another thing that everyone in the castle simply presumed that he knew about. Yeah, that's me. "You are smaller than I anticipated," the dragon huffs. Merlin gets the feeling that he's just been insulted. "So human, but with so much power." "I hurt the prince," Merlin blurts. The confession tumbles out of him unbidden and unwanted. Hearing it aloud again makes a pain constrict in his chest. "The power I have, it hurt Arthur." "And within you lies the means to fix what you have broken." "My magic is what caused this." The dragon's eyes, large and wise, twinkle. "Magic is not the solution to all problems, Merlin." "Then what is it?" Merlin says, aware, dimly, that he is snapping at a dragon and that is surely a recipe for getting yourself barbecued. "Tell me how to save him." "It lies in you," the dragon responds, his voice deep and booming. Overdramatic, melodramatic, and with a whooshing wind, his huge wings flap and he takes flight, disappearing into the dark recesses of the cave. Merlin's certain he must be doing this on purpose, toying with him. The dragon does not come back, and Merlin swears he can hear a chuckle echoing from the dark corners of the cave, and he has to leave. The guards are not back yet, but it won't be long before they are. He doesn't know how he'd explain why he was down there, but he's done enough to upset the royals without adding dragon baiting to his crimes. "Merlin," Gaius says when he makes it back to his chambers, "where's the water?" Merlin looks down at his hands as if expecting a bucket to materialize there for him. Unsurprisingly, it doesn't happen. "I forgot," he says. Gaius does not scold him for his absent-mindedness. "Understandable, I'm sure," he murmurs, almost to himself. Frowning, Merlin moves further into the room. He looks down at Arthur's pale face. "How is he?" he asks. "Hard to say," Gaius answers, which is really not much of an answer at all, but Merlin knows exactly how to interpret it. "I don't have a bloody clue." "I was talking to someone," he says without looking away from Arthur. "They said I could fix him, that it was in me." "Ah," Gaius walks closer to him, and the movement makes Merlin look up, his gaze breaking away from the prince's body. "And what do you think that means, Merlin?" "He's a vampire." A statement that, until tonight, he might still have had a little difficulty absorbing. The creature that had attacked him in Arthur's bedroom earlier tonight, with black eyes and sharp reflexes, that had been far from human. "Vampires are not creatures of your science or my magic. They thrive on blood." Gaius's face darkens like a storm approaching. "I hope you aren't suggesting what I think you are. We have no way of knowing how he would react to the special qualities in your blood." Magic. Merlin can remember the way that Arthur's eyes had shone gold after he drank the small amount of blood from his finger. He hasn't mentioned that to Gaius. He doesn't want to think about it, but he wants Arthur to live, and maybe this is it. This is what the dragon meant. I have to try, he says. He can't stop himself from sounding absolutely terrified about the prospect. This is what he and Arthur had tried to prevent when they'd woken in the night. All roads lead here, it would seem. Gaius's eyebrows rise in disapproval. Wait here. I'll fetch Lady Morgana. Perhaps she will have a brighter light to shine on our situation. Merlin nods. He can't help but think that perhaps Gaius is leaving him alone with Arthur on purpose. Perhaps he is more accepting of what needs to be done than he wants to admit. Once the door has closed, Merlin looks skittishly down at Arthur. He's pale and his skin looks clammy. His chest still refuses to rise or fall. Merlin swallows. Turning away and rifling through Gaius's wealth of storage space, he manages to find some towels, some bandages, the same preparations he'd seen Gwen taking yesterday. Only yesterday, he thinks mournfully, because his life is changing faster than he is able to process. As he sits on the edge of the makeshift bed that Arthur lies in, he begins to roll up his sleeve in preparation until it is folded past his elbow. His skin is white and unblemished, without even a single freckle. Breathing shallowly, he places his hand over his forearm and wishes that he had Gwen at his side to show him exactly what to do for the least permanent damage. Eyes focused on his arm, he murmurs ancient words under his breath and hopes that this will work. He feels it suddenly, the rush of magic and slash of pain. Blood wells instantly, red and hot over his skin. He curses beneath his breath, mouth open and eyes gold as he looks at Arthur's face, and watches the prince move. It's hardly anything at all, a slight turn to his head and a grumbling sound, but it's enough to convince him that the dragon might be right. Bottling his fear away as firmly as he can, Merlin shuffles up the bed, closer to the top, and presses his bleeding arm close to Arthur's mouth. Drink, he urges when nothing happens. Please, sire, drink. A single drop falls from the wound. It lands on Arthur's pale pink bottom lip, an ugly red droplet. It looks as if he's wearing makeup, and if Merlin weren't so worried, he'd laugh. If this was a different moment, a different life, he'd make fun of Arthur for it, tease him until Arthur lost his temper and either tantrumed or decided to teach him a lesson. As it is, the smile doesn't come until he sees Arthur's tongue flick against his bottom lip. That's it, he says, edging closer again. Another set of droplets fall as he moves, and then he feels Arthur's lips against his wound. It hurts badly, but it's something else as well, a silent thrill down his spine at being able to help like this, being needed like this. He watches, breathless, as the blood trickles into Arthur's waiting mouth. Arthur's throat moves, Adam's apple bobbing as he swallows. Merlin hisses at the sudden pain as Arthur's tongue traces the wound, but it hurts for only a moment, then it's something different. More. He hears a rumbling moan, a sound that comes right from Arthur's chest, and he can't help making a sound of his own in return. At a moment like this, he can understand the dirty vampire literature that populates the castle's library. Arthur's arms move until his strong hands hold on to Merlin's wrist, holding his arm tight against his mouth. It's all right, Merlin assures him. He isn't even embarrassed by the hoarse, breathless sound of his voice. I'm not going anywhere, Arthur. Arthur answers without a word, opening his eyes instead. Merlin can see the dark gold swirling in them, power of two kinds rushing throughout Arthur's body. The grip on his wrist is so tight that it's more painful than the cut itself, but Merlin doesn't say a word about that. He keeps staring into Arthur's inhuman eyes, unable to tear his gaze away. It's powerful, hypnotizing. After a few moments, Merlin barely feels the pain in his arm. He doesn't feel anything at all. Numb. It's a relief to give in so completely. Arthur's fangs tease the cut, widening it, worsening it. There is blood running down his cheeks, a messy drunk, but Merlin barely notices. He sways, light-headed, but the strength of Arthur's golden gaze keeps him from slumping over.
"Arthur," Merlin breathes. His voice is not his own. He knows that he's never sounded so weak, helpless, or wanton in his life. In Arthur's eyes, he can see an uncertain plea to make him stop, but he can't do a thing. Doesn't want to do a thing, just wants to sit here and watch Arthur take everything he is from him. He is the prince. He is the hunter. He is a vampire. He is owed everything, is he not? The door opens with a thunderous slam. Merlin doesn't look towards it, and Arthur doesn't either. The shout of their names, growling, hissing, none of it works. None of it breaks the contact between them. Merlin feels like he's swaying again, feels like he's dying. A hard weight thuds into his side, and he is thrown from the bed, finding himself flat on the floor and tangled in the endless white material of Morgana's nightdress. His arm hurts now, aches, and his shoulder provides an extra pain from the way he was yanked from Arthur's supernatural grip. Morgana disappears out of his line of sight. He can hear growls and yelps, like a pair of dogs fighting. Gaius kneels beside him, Gwen too.
"Try not to move, you stupid boy," Gaius says, and the worried irritation in his voice is enough to let Merlin know that he'll probably be stuck doing dreadful chores for the rest of his life to make it up to Gaius for giving him the fright of his life. He tries not to scream as Gaius moves his arm to tend to it. As his eyes water, he says, "Arthur?"
"He's fine," Gaius answers curtly, "considering that he and Morgana are in the process of trying to destroy my chambers, I'd say your cure worked a treat."
Merlin's face, pale from blood loss, relaxes into a smile.
"Finally managed to do something right, didn't I?"
Fading in and out of consciousness, he misses Gaius's reply. But sleep is so warm, heavy, and painless, he can't say he minds too much. The first thing Arthur says to him when he wakes up is,
"I should have you put in the stocks for this, you know."
Merlin grumbles and closes his eyes again. He doesn't want to be conscious if he's only going to be ranted at. There's a hand carding through his hair, and he thinks it's Arthur's. It's comforting.
"Or whipped. I should have you whipped."
"What for?" Merlin mumbles. Arthur doesn't respond at first. Merlin tries to shift his head, and that's when he notices that it isn't a pillow he's resting on. It's Arthur's thigh. If he opens his eyes, he might be able to work out where he actually is, but he quickly decides that knowing is not nearly that important to him.
"For worrying the prince," Arthur says eventually.
He clears his throat afterwards, as if that might help to wipe the words away.
"And, of course, for being such an utter idiot that you thought you could outrun a vampire. Do you have any survival instincts at all, Merlin?"
"Only a few," Merlin admits. Right now, all of them are telling him that he ought to get out of here fast. He used magic, not only in front of Arthur, but on him. But Arthur would surely already have had the guards set upon him if he intended on doing so. Merlin can't convince himself that he is safe, but he doesn't think he is directly in danger yet.
"We'll have to talk soon, you know,"
Arthur announces like a king pronouncing a decree, "about what happened back there." And maybe Merlin could convince himself that Arthur means a whole wealth of the things that have happened in the last 24 hours, but he knows what it is that haunts Arthur's thoughts just as it does his own. Magic. Arthur's black eyes had shone gold at him as he drank. That means something. It has to mean something.
"Soon," Merlin agrees, "but not yet?"
"Not just yet."
Safe under Arthur's care for now, Merlin allows himself to relax as much as he can, but he can't help but curse at himself for allowing this to happen, knowing that this could have all been avoided if they'd just shown a little self-restraint.
It's all fun and games until someone turns into a squirrel. Written by Toast Taste Good and read by Eos Rose. Over the past few days, Merlin has avoided certain areas of the castle. A survival strategy, of course. These areas include, but are not limited to, Arthur's bedroom, Morgana's chambers, the Great Hall, all the lesser halls, the training grounds, the castle's grounds in general, the stables, the armory, and anywhere else that a royal vampire is likely to skulk around. Not that Arthur skulks, really. He's nothing like what Merlin thinks a vampire ought to be like, or even what tradition and legend would require him to be. He strides around in the sunlight, and he doesn't wear any black clothing. Merlin's fairly certain that he can't turn into a bat, either. If Arthur had such an ability, Merlin has no doubt that he'd spend every waking moment showing off with it. The wound on his arm is healing nicely, Gaius says, but it itches like mad. On nights when he can't sleep, it's like he can still feel Arthur's lips against his skin, and he can imagine Arthur's fangs teasing the cut. Arthur's eyes had shone gold as he drank, and Merlin doesn't know what that means. He doesn't particularly want to know, and therefore the best thing to do is to avoid everywhere that might result in him running into the prince. Unfortunately, that does somewhat restrict where in the castle he can actually go. It's hard to hide from someone in his own castle. Merlin likes to think that he's done a rather admirable job of it, to be honest. Though Gaius has taken to frowning at him in disapproval at every opportunity he gets, and Gwen is fond of sighing at him. Avoiding Arthur is a full-time job, and when Merlin heads to his bedroom at the back of Gaius's quarters at the end of the day, he's looking forward to slumping into bed and sleeping for an unnatural length of time. As with all things in life, however, he should have known that this would not go exactly according to plan. After plopping down onto the bed, lying on his back, Merlin tries to toe off his boots without sitting up to use his hands. It's fair to say that he does not succeed at all, and in fact his attempts only make his shoes wedge themselves in an uncomfortable position on his feet. With a put-upon groan, he pulls himself up into a sitting position and finds himself staring at a moody-looking vampire standing by his door. Merlin isn't sure if it's the fact that he's moody, the fact that it's a vampire, or the fact that it's Arthur that is the most terrifying, but he knows without a doubt that the combination of all three can't be a good thing. "Hello," he says after a brief pause, during which it becomes clear that Arthur is not going to be the first one to speak. "You've been avoiding me," Arthur says. "Ever since what happened on the full moon, you've been skulking around the castle without doing your job. If you were anyone else, I'd fire you." "Why don't you fire me?" Merlin suggests. "I'm awful at my job. You tell me that all the time."
"I tell you that because you are awful at your job. You didn't even see fit to turn up all this week."
He sounds exasperated, and Merlin realizes with a warm, loved sense of horror, more than a little affectionate. "But I want you working here, so you won't get to squirm out of it that easily, Merlin." He says Merlin's name like it's an insult, something mean to throw at him. Merlin finds himself smiling despite all his determination not to. "I needed a break," he states, a flimsy excuse. Judging from Arthur's expression, he knows it. "I did nearly die a few days ago, sire. I think that warrants a few days off."
Arthur nearly died as well, all because of him, and that's the thing he wants to avoid most. Not Arthur's presence as such, but the possibility of having to discuss what happened. Arthur checks that the door is closed and then looks at Merlin with the most serious expression on his face that Merlin has ever seen. He dreads what might be about to come out of his mouth, but the words he utters are certainly not what he was expecting.
I turned Gaius into a squirrel.
That, Merlin has to admit, is certainly not what he'd ever predicted Arthur would say when they ran into each other again.
Oh?
He replies, eyebrows raised, because there is very little that he can think to actually say. When he thinks about it now, Gaius has been uncharacteristically twitchy for the past 2 days.
While you were passed out after I drank from you, Gaius touched my shoulder, and a moment later he was running around on the floor. I don't suppose you'd know why that is.
The leading tone of his voice says that he knows Merlin has a few answers tucked away in the dark corners of his brain, but Merlin smiles all the same and shrugs innocently.
Why would I know? Maybe it's some new vampire thing.
Arthur watches him. Merlin would swear that he doesn't even blink.
It happened after I tasted your blood. Your blood.
That is a very strange coincidence, I agree.
Merlin.
Warm and coaxing, there is only the faintest hint of disapproval in Arthur's voice, but that doesn't stop Merlin from tensing when Arthur takes a step forward. It's an instinctual thing, far beyond his control, but Arthur's footsteps falter then stop all the same.
If I was going to hurt you, I would have done so long before now.
Arthur sighs at him. And if I was going to have you punished for using magic, I would have sent the guards for you immediately.
I didn't use magic, Merlin lies automatically. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's in your blood, Arthur says, as if he hadn't bothered to protest his innocence. The magic itself is in your blood. I didn't think it worked like that.
What do you mean?
It's something you learn. I shouldn't be able to taste it any more than I'd be able to taste that someone can speak Latin or dance. Which means that there's something different about you. I'd like to know what it is.
Arthur's eyes search him, assess him, and Merlin doesn't know what to say. Confession lingers on the very edge of his tongue.
What are you?
I'm a person, he answers, too fast, too defensive, because this is a question he's been left wondering far too often recently.
Just like everybody else.
Not just like them.
Arthur moves forward again, and Merlin manages not to flinch, though he's tense, ridiculously tense. Arthur sits at the end of his bed, watching him with eyes that look so human now. A far cry from the inky blackness that fills them when he's hungry.
You used magic on me, didn't you? You don't have to say it, just nod.
It's easier when he doesn't have to say the words. Easy, but still a little on the terrifying side. He used magic against a member of the royal family. Merlin's fairly certain that a plea of self-defense isn't sufficient in such cases, but some irrational part of him trusts Arthur. He nods. Arthur lets out a long puff of air and his shoulders sag.
So you're a sorcerer?
Merlin's eyes are wide and he's trying to work out what he'll do if Arthur turns on him.
Yes, he admits, very small and very quiet.
Does anybody else know?
Just Gaius.
You're sure of this?
Yes, I'm sure,
Merlin sighs. It's the only secret he's ever been able to keep, and the only one he's ever had to. He doesn't let it slip out nonchalantly.
Let's make sure it stays that way, Arthur says decisively. Don't tell another soul. My father hates magic after what was done to Morgana and myself. It would be best not to give him another target for his anger. Unless you want to be the next in line for the chopping block.
No thanks, Merlin mutters with a shiver. Knowing what happens to people like him in this kingdom makes him wonder every day if he should just go home and take his chances there. Anything would be safer than hiding right under the king's nose, surely.
You're not going to tell Uther?
Any troubles that Arthur may have with lying to his own father are hidden well by his expression,
No, I'm not. Now move over, I want to lie down.
I'm not letting you sleep here, you know, Merlin says, even as he shifts over on the bed to allow Arthur room to lie beside him. Last time we shared a bed, you tried to eat me.
But I didn't actually do so.
Only 'cause I stopped you.
Yes, with that strange magic of yours, Arthur says defensively, as if that had been cheating.
He rests beside Merlin, and without asking if it's okay, he moves his arm around Merlin's shoulders. One firm tug causes Merlin to fall against him, which leaves him leaning against his chest.
What else can you do other than drive me mad?
Merlin shrugs. He doesn't quite feel up to demonstrations yet. It's alarming enough to let Arthur know about it, let alone see it.
Sometimes when you give me too much to do, I use magic to help, he confesses.
There's an amused smile in Arthur's voice when he answers,
You have all this power at your fingertips, and you choose to use it on chores. You're something else, Merlin, that's for certain.
Merlin snorts. When you had it, you turned Gaius into a squirrel. I think I'm making better use of it than you did.
I also turned him back, Arthur points out.
Ah, so you used my magic to fix your own mistakes?
I'm the prince. I don't make mistakes.
Arthur clears his throat importantly. Leaning against him, Merlin can hear the way it rumbles through his chest, and he smiles.
I knew exactly what I was doing.
I'm sure you did, Merlin agrees. He wishes he'd been around to see it. Maybe one day he will be. He knows that this won't have been the last time that Arthur drinks from him. Relying solely upon Arthur's self-restraint isn't an acceptable plan. It isn't something he's worrying about now, lying in bed with Arthur. Arthur's arm around his shoulders is comforting, and though Merlin can feel the way he inhales deeply to take in the scent of him, he doesn't bother to mention it. As long as it's smelling and not tasting, he thinks it can't be too harmful. With Arthur now aware of his secret, the world seems like a slightly less dangerous place, because he knows that, whatever comes next, they'll be facing it together.
Sire, written by Toast Taste Good and read by Eos Rose. Merlin is minding his own business, bothering nobody at all as he makes Arthur's bed, and he really has no idea how Arthur manages to mess it up so easily considering that he hardly sleeps, when something thuds against his back. He straightens up and looks at his feet where the object has landed. It appears to be a leather bag of some description. It's already packed. He glances up and finds Arthur standing in the doorway, looking at him with the air of affectionate annoyance that he is an expert at projecting. There's something else, though, something underneath, but Arthur sighs expectantly at him before Merlin can analyze it with any depth.
Are you going to pick that up or not?
It wouldn't be on the floor if you hadn't thrown it, Merlin complains, but he abandons the bed to stoop down to the floor and lift the bag. He takes the opportunity to peek inside it. There are night clothes, a small coin bag, and some food.
What's going on?
He has the sinking feeling that Arthur is going to announce that they're going to go camping. While he enjoyed doing so as a boy with Will, something tells him that camping with a vampire isn't the smartest of ideas.
You're going to stay with Gwen for a few nights, Arthur announces.
Considering that Gwen sleeps in Lady Morgana's chambers these days, Merlin can't imagine needing a pack for that. He arches his eyebrows.
And Gwen will be staying in the village with her father. Don't come near the castle.
Now there's a warning bell, if ever he'd heard one.
May I ask why, sire? Merlin asks cautiously, knowing there's either an extremely good reason for the request, or that it's simply a case of Arthur being an utter prat. Again. Morgana says we're working both of you too hard.
While she rarely knows what she's talking about, I tend to agree with her on this one. Arthur says, Merlin doesn't believe him for even a second. If he was going to come up with a lie, he would have been better to think of one that didn't involve him openly taking advice from Morgana. You're sure that's what it is? He asks. Remember, if it's vampire stuff and you're just assuming that I know what you're implying, then I don't. I never do.
I've learnt that lesson by now, Merlin. Don't worry, I'll use small words should the need arise.
Arthur smiles, the sunlight from the open window forcing him to squint his eyes a little.
I didn't expect you to complain about receiving another break. Most servants would be thanking me profusely by this point. I'm being very generous.
Generous by not so subtly getting me out of the way? Merlin asks, but the frown that flashes on Arthur's face is enough to tell him that it would be wise to drop the subject and do as he's told.
Should I finish up here, or would you like me to leave now?
You can go now, Arthur says. Guinevere will be waiting for you in Morgana's chambers. Merlin nods and slings the bag over his shoulder. It's light and easy to carry. Though he knows it's time to leave, he lingers for a moment longer, studying Arthur.
Are you sure I can't stay? He asks.
Absolutely certain, Arthur answers without taking even a split second to deliberate. As touching as your newfound work ethic is, Merlin, I'm sure I can survive without you for a few days. Merlin snorts dismissively, just to see the offended twist on Arthur's face.
If you say so, my lord. See you soon, then.
Arthur nods and claps a lingering hand on Merlin's back as Merlin walks past him to leave the room.
Be careful, he urges, and it's all that Merlin can do not to yell at him that he is an absolute idiot for not telling him what's going on. Hopefully Gwen will have more information for him.
He leaves the room and makes his way across the castle. In Morgana's chambers, there is a similarly worrying scene going on. Concerned goodbyes and preparations and warnings not to come near the castle until it's safe.
What's going on? Merlin asks, but Morgana shakes her head and doesn't tell him.
He distracts himself with looking out of the window when the two women kiss, clinging tightly to each other while they have a chance. Outside, the day is bright, and the area around the castle is as busy as ever. The landscape doesn't seem in keeping with the urgent atmosphere that surrounds Morgana and Arthur today. It's happy outside, and yet worried within the castle. Merlin can't fight the feeling that something bad is descending upon Camelot. If that is the case, then surely he should be there at Arthur's side to help in any way that he can. Arthur knows about his magic now. He knows that he can be of so much use to him. And yet, annoyingly, Arthur is a stubborn, stupid, sniffing idiot, and that means that Merlin has no choice but to go along with it when Gwen approaches him. Together they leave Morgana's room and ultimately the castle, but when Merlin asks Gwen for answers, she shakes her head as well.
I don't know. Morgana, she won't tell me.
If anything, Merlin would say that that is the most worrying omen of all. Naturally, he only follows the instructions to stay away from the castle for approximately half an hour before he allows his path to lead him back to where he'd come from. And, just as naturally, Arthur catches him when he does and sternly sends him back to the village. It's difficult to hide your presence from someone who can smell you from half a mile away. Gwen's father is a sweet and kind man who seems delighted to have his daughter in his home again. Merlin wonders how much he knows about the nature of the royal family, but he holds his tongue. That is a question for another day, and he doesn't want to get Gwen into trouble if he can avoid it. The day is long and boring, and even Gwen's bright manner can't keep him distracted. His gaze continually drifts towards the castle that looms over the town.
It doesn't get any better the next day. He's sent to the market to buy bread, but he spends over 5 minutes staring blankly at the different loaves, his mind back in the castle instead of here in the town. "Having trouble deciding?" a stranger beside him asks. Merlin looks up and tries not to allow the surprise to show on his face when he sees him. One side of the man's face is coated with scars and melted skin. The hood of his cloak is pulled over his head, but it does very little to disguise the disfigurement. "The bread. You've been staring at it for a while now." Merlin looks down at the loaves he'd been standing in front of, and smiles as he realizes how long he's been lost in his own thoughts. "No, it's fine. I was just thinking, that's all." "Thinking," the scarred man repeats, hanging on the word for a little longer than strictly necessary. "And what would you be thinking about, "Nothing important." Merlin flashes a smile despite his growing discomfort. "It's nothing in particular that he can put his finger on, but something about this entire situation is whispering danger at him. The rest of the market is loud and bustling, and the sun still shines brightly, but Merlin can feel a cool chill on his skin. Something isn't right. Something really isn't right." He takes a small step backwards, and that's when he sees it. The flash of black within the stranger's blue eyes, predatory and aggressive. It's something he's seen in Arthur's eyes more times than he's comfortable with, but even that feels different from this. That feels so much safer. He steps back again and almost stumbles into someone behind him. "I should go," he breathes, unable to take his eyes off the man, the vampire, in front of him. The vampire dips his head in amused agreement. "I'll see you soon, no doubt," he says as goodbye. Merlin's reasonably sure that that probably qualifies as a threat, but he takes a few more backward steps and won't turn around until the stranger is a fair distance away already. "This can't mean anything good," he thinks to himself as he makes his rushed way back to Gwen's home. In fact, it almost certainly means something bad. Very bad. And, not to mention, he's pretty sure that Arthur already knows about it. Other vampires in Camelot? That couldn't go unnoticed. Maybe humans wouldn't have picked up on it, but Merlin knows just how advanced Arthur and Morgana's senses are now. They know. They must know. He checks over his shoulder when he reaches the right place, but there's nobody following him. Evidently, there are more important things to occupy a vampire's time than chasing down servants, even if Arthur's behavior sometimes leads Merlin to believe otherwise. He slips inside and closes the door behind him. "Merlin," Gwen says, frowning when she sees him, "where's the bread?" "There's a vampire," Merlin tells her hurriedly. Seems a little bit more important than bread right now, though his hungry stomach insists that it is only a little. "Right here in Camelot, there's another vampire. I met him in the market." Gwen stands up and walks forward. The concern on her face almost makes Merlin wish that he hadn't said anything at all. "Are you sure?" she asks. "Absolutely. I saw his eyes go black when he was talking to me." Her gaze slips away from him and she looks at nothing in particular. He can see her thinking, see the way that thoughts are churning inside her mind, but she looks just as lost as he is. "What did he look like?" she asks eventually. "He had scars. Half of his face had been burned, I think. Badly. I couldn't see much else. He was wearing a cloak." "Edwin," Gwen breathes. The name itself means nothing to Merlin, but the way she says it does. Trouble's brewing. "Who's that? Who's Edwin?" "He's the vampire that turned them," she tells him, looking back to meet his eyes. "Their sire. He's never come here before. He's not supposed to come here.
I don't understand.
They knew, didn't they? Merlin says as it dawns on him. Arthur and Morgana must have known. That's why they sent us away.
To protect us,
Gwen agrees, barely breathing those last two words.
They were probably right to do so, Merlin. If half of what I've heard about him is true, then we need to stay out of his way.
And Arthur? Morgana? It's not right for them to be in his path either. If they had simply been told, then together they could have come up with a plan. Arthur knows what Merlin is capable of. Now Merlin only needs to manage to force Arthur to get over any ridiculous matters of pride that prevent him from asking for help. His magic had stopped Arthur in his tracks when he'd tried to drink from him. It works against vampires, extremely effectively. There are ways to kill a vampire, and if Edwin is a threat, then Merlin can't see any reason to hesitate. He's not dangerous to them. He's old, Merlin. Much older than he looks. Morgana told me about him. The way Gwen shudders implies that none of it was good. There's a long pause before she speaks again. He views humans as food. That's it. Nothing higher.
Then he should be stopped, Merlin says. There's nothing to think about, not for him.
If Arthur won't do it, then I will.
It's not that simple, Gwen protests, but Merlin has turned to leave already. He's fueled by the need to do something, regardless of what that something turns out to be. The journey to the castle seems to take far too long, and he has to dodge around the crowds of people once he makes it there. The guards that see him shift nervously as he enters the front gates. He wonders if they've been told that he's not supposed to be here. Trying to have him banned officially from the castle seems like the annoyingly stubborn sort of thing that Arthur would do. But the guards don't actually make a move to stop him. They share worried glances, but stay at their posts like good little soldiers. It's just as well, because the combination of worry and frustration has left Merlin feeling as if he's about to ignite. He doesn't know what he'd do if someone got in his way right now, but he can guarantee that it would be less than pleasant. They let him pass. He hardly notices anyone else as he makes his way to Arthur's chambers. Doesn't know what happens next in his plan. The idea that he even has a plan is somewhat laughable. He's acting on instinct right now. Instinct and emotion, so there's no room for planning or logic. But he knows that it won't take long for Arthur to meet him there, if he isn't waiting for him already. There's something almost dizzying about having that level of power over the prince. It isn't anything direct, and Merlin knows that Arthur would deny it until the end of time, but he has an influence and a way of predicting what Arthur will do next. Most of the time, in any case. When he reaches Arthur's chambers, he pushes the doors open and walks inside without knocking first. Arthur is there, leaning against one of the posts of his bed with his arms crossed over his chest.
"It seems that something is wrong with your hearing, Merlin. I distinctly remember telling you to stay away from the castle, and yet here you are, again. Perhaps you ought to have Gaius look into that for you," he says as Merlin enters, but despite the nonchalant words, there is an undertone of anger in his voice. It should scare Merlin. It doesn't. Not at all. He stands his ground in front of Arthur. The look in his eyes is possibly even a glare. "I know Edwin is here in Camelot," he states. His breath is ragged from his angry rush to the castle. "You should have told me."
"You seem to forget that I am the prince, Merlin. I have no obligation to tell you anything." Arthur sighs at him, but Merlin has no problem withholding his gaze in defiance.
"And I chose not to tell you because I wanted you to stay out of the way. What I should have realized is that nothing short of having you chained in the dungeons will keep you out of trouble."
"Let's be realistic, sire.
You know even that wouldn't work.
Merlin offers a smile without meaning to, his own version of a peace offering.
You really should have told me.
It wasn't important.
If it wasn't important, you would have had no problem with telling me, Merlin points out.
Why are you protecting him? Gwen told me about him, all about him. He's a monster.
He's a vampire, like me.
No, not like you.
Merlin shakes his head as he speaks, believing what he's saying with every ounce of his being.
You are different, you and Lady Morgana. You choose to be different.
He steps forward, getting closer, though there's still a sizable gap between them. Arthur eyes him cautiously, but doesn't tell him to stay away. He hasn't told him to go either, and Merlin supposes that that can only be a good sign. The instruction to leave is another order he won't follow.
I met him, Arthur, in the market. He's not a good person.
There had been nothing in particular in their brief meeting to make him come to such a conclusion, but Merlin can feel that it's true. The history of Edwin's actions should surely speak for itself as well. He turned Arthur and Morgana into what they are now against their will. Merlin knows the stories, and while the details are kept hidden, too much to be shared, he knows that it isn't right and that it is not the kind of thing that anyone should be forgiven for.
He was in the town? Arthur asks, a frown creasing his brow.
Merlin feels that he ought to shake him. This is what troubles Arthur? Not that Edwin is here, but that he is in the town instead of the castle?
Yes, he was there. He could have hurt someone.
Behind him, the door opens, and he barely has time to turn around before the scarred vampire answers.
I wasn't there to hurt anyone. I wanted to see who it was that Arthur was trying to hide from me. That's all.
There is a permanent smirk etched upon his scarred face, and Merlin almost jumps, startled, when he feels Arthur grasping tightly onto his arm and pulling him back. With annoyingly superior strength, it is easy for Arthur to manhandle him until Merlin nearly tumbles onto the foot of the bed. Merlin is as far from Edwin as he can be without being flung onto the mattress. Arthur seems, for a moment, as if he's considering that action, but Merlin glares at him in a way that implies that there will be lots of consequences if he tries such a thing. Dire, embarrassing, and painful consequences.
Merlin is of no concern to you, Arthur states. You shouldn't have hunted him down.
You stink of him. He stinks of you. I can't help being curious.
Edwin's smile suggests that actually he could help it, but he chooses not to.
A sorcerer, Arthur. I wouldn't have thought that that would be to your taste.
You know nothing of my tastes, Edwin.
Arthur says. The annoyance in his voice is far from the affectionate kind that he usually levels at Merlin. This is bordering upon anger.
Don't presume that because you are my sire, you know anything about me.
I know that you permit your father to persecute your own kind, Edwin says.
We turned you for a reason, to change Camelot and free the supernatural from your father's tyranny.
Yet for some reason you...
You are not to talk of my father in such a way, Arthur snarls. Remember whose kingdom you are in. Tread carefully.
Edwin smiles, cold and mocking.
Of course, my lord. I spoke out of turn, and I apologize for it. It shan't happen again.
See that it doesn't, Arthur instructs, taking him at his word, even though the insincerity drips from Edwin with every second. Merlin glances at Arthur, confused, because this isn't the Arthur he knows. If this had been anyone but Edwin, then he would have been dealt with far more harshly. Merlin is usually the only one who can get away with such barefaced cheek. At least when it's coming from him, there's no underlying maliciousness.
And I think it's time for you to leave, nonetheless, don't you?
Edwin murmurs noncommittally. What will happen if I refuse?
What do you think? Merlin responds. He receives a painful nudge in the ribs from Arthur because of it, but he only scowls in return. He is far from a fan of Uther's policy towards magic, but in this case he thinks it might be justified. Being in the room with Edwin leaves the air feeling rotten and dirty. Edwin is old and he is evil. Merlin can feel it, sense it. He can almost taste it.
I think that perhaps your prince has been keeping some important details from you, sorcerer, Edwin answers. His smile never fades as his pale blue eyes glance back to Arthur. Am I right in thinking that he doesn't know? Arthur says nothing in return, and that alone is ominous enough for Merlin to look towards him instead of at Edwin, trying to seek answers from his expression.
What does he mean? He asks earnestly. Arthur isn't breathing, choosing to overcome that reflex, and it makes him look as still and immortal as Edwin does.
Go on, Edwin says. Will you tell him, or shall I? Arthur's response is a low growl, a snarling sound that curls his lip and is enough to make the smug smile on Edwin's face falter, if only for a second. It's a sound that has the same effect as the howl of a wolf in an empty forest. It chills the blood. Even Merlin shivers, knowing it isn't directed at him.
You don't talk to him, Arthur says. Not ever.
I wouldn't dream of it, Edwin promises, the smirk back on his face. But perhaps you should allow him to know the truth before he does something he might regret. Only silence follows, and by this point, after everything, Merlin is feeling rather sick of silence and of being kept in the dark. He's also, for that matter, rather fed up of Arthur's bizarre ideas of protecting him, which mostly seem to involve not telling him anything and then being surprised when he gets into trouble because of it. With that in mind, he ends up on Edwin's side in this debate.
What is he talking about, Arthur? If you won't tell me, I'll just ask him, you know?
And he will, and Edwin will tell him, and then Arthur will stomp around in a terribly bad mood for a while, but to be honest, the prospect doesn't worry Merlin too much. He'll get over it. The prince is always having minor tantrums, and Merlin has the feeling that all he will have to do to get on Arthur's good side again is allow him to take a good, deep sniff by his neck. A dangerous apology, perhaps, but one that would undoubtedly work in his favor. Hopefully. Thankfully, he doesn't have to experiment to find out, because Arthur growls unhappily but speaks.
Edwin and I, we have a connection.
A connection? Well, that tells him absolutely nothing at all. In confusion, Merlin glances between the two men, trying to work out what Arthur means by that. Whatever it is, it can't be good. The deepening amusement on Edwin's scarred face tells him as much. Anything that can make someone with such a black heart happy is a very bad thing indeed.
What does that mean? Merlin asks eventually, when it becomes clear that Arthur is not in any kind of hurry to elaborate.
It means, Edwin says gleefully, that you can't kill me, or hurt me for that matter, not without harming your little golden boy over there.
I told you not to speak to him,
Arthur repeats tersely, but he has to give an annoyed sigh when Merlin looks at him for more information.
If you hurt or kill one vampire, all the others below it in its line suffer the effects as well. That's why there are so few on Earth. If you stake one vampire, you may actually kill hundreds.
So if something happens to Edwin,
it happens to me too, and Morgana, for that matter,
Arthur replies with a lofty wave of his hand, as if it hardly matters at all. It does matter. Merlin can see it on his face, hidden beneath those layers of arrogance. He crosses his arms over his chest, frowns, and conducts a small experiment. He steps forward and kicks Edwin sharply in the shin. The scientific method. Gaius would be proud. Arthur, however, probably isn't, considering that he's currently far too occupied with spluttering swear words and clutching his shin. "What did you do that for?" he asks, ignoring Edwin as he hops in a similar state, his long cloak shuffling along the ground with every wobbling movement. "I wanted to see it for myself. Are you all right?" He looks worriedly down at Arthur's leg. At heart, he hadn't really thought that anything would happen. With a life drowning in magic and the supernatural, he wonders if he ought to learn better than that sometime soon. "I'm fine," Arthur mutters unhappily. Merlin gets the distinct impression that he isn't going to hear the end of this for weeks, and that Arthur is going to refer to it every single time that he wants to rant about how any other nobleman would have had Merlin sacked ages ago. "I do find it endearing, Arthur, how much you allow him to get away with," Edwin says. "It's far worse than Morgana and her girl." "You should leave. I may not be able to harm you physically, but that will not stop me from having you thrown in the dungeons," Arthur threatens. A growl still threads through every word in a way that is almost enough to make Merlin shiver. When Arthur talks like this, it is impossible to pretend that he isn't dangerous. There's a passing second where Edwin doesn't move at all and he just stares, his pale blue eyes seeing everything, seeing eternity. Merlin shuffles uncomfortably on the spot, and he has to wonder if he's going to end up trying to break up some sort of epic vampire battle. That couldn't end well, not at all. In fact, as far as he can see, that will probably end up with him getting hurt rather than either of them. And then Arthur will have to growl and snarl some more, and he would really rather just avoid the entire situation altogether. It would be for the best. It doesn't come to that. Edwin leaves just as he was instructed to. His long cloak sweeps behind him and the doors slam loudly in his wake. It's only when the sound of his footsteps fade to nothing that Merlin allows himself to relax, but it takes Arthur much longer. He can hear him until he's much further away. "Sorry about your leg," Merlin mutters, hands in pockets, not because he's really all too sorry, but because he knows that he has to say it. There are other things he'd much rather dwell on, truth be told. "As I said, it's fine. You kick like a girl," Arthur complains. "It's really quite pitiful." "Looked sore enough at the time," Merlin points out, something that Arthur chooses to ignore. "Stubborn ass." Arthur moves away from him, leisurely striding over to the table in the center of his rooms. His fingers trail over the wood as he walks towards the window, getting into a position where he can watch the courtyard, to ensure that Edwin really does leave as he was told to do. Merlin drifts closer, drawn automatically. It's an instinctual thing, always being reeled in like this. He'd blame Arthur for doing this on purpose, using a vampiric power to keep him close, but he has no doubt that if Arthur had such an ability, he would spend a great deal of his time boasting about it. "You didn't tell me about Edwin before," he says. It sounds like an accusation. He thinks that it probably is one. He knows nothing about what has happened in Arthur's past, or how he came to be this way. The details that he does know come from alternate sources, from Gaius or from Gwen. Arthur and Morgana were kidnapped and turned in an attempt to put a vampire in charge of Camelot. It sounded so impersonal before Edwin was drawn into the picture. Arthur won't turn around to face him. "You could die at any moment, really. Right?
All it would take would be for someone to take down a single one of your ancestors, and you'd be gone. You didn't think that that was important enough to mention?
It's not the sort of thing that comes up in casual conversation, Merlin, Arthur tells him, exasperated.
Merlin knows that that is the tone of voice that usually means that Arthur wants him to go away for once and stop being so annoying. He doesn't pay it any attention.
Then you should bring it up in non-casual conversation. Wouldn't you want to know if there was a possibility of me dying out of the blue? Merlin asks, and the angry grunt that is Arthur's response is all the answer he needs. He can see the way Arthur's fist tightens at the thought, and he wonders if Arthur would try to pick a fight with fate itself if something like that truly did happen to him. It's endearing in a discomforting kind of way.
Remember that this thing between us isn't just one way.
Is that so? Arthur still hasn't turned around, but that's all right. Merlin hadn't really expected him to. He knows Arthur well enough to know that he would rather stand at a window brooding than have any kind of real conversation.
I'm allowed to worry about you too, Merlin says. The words bring a gentle, glowing feeling to his chest as they leave his mouth. They're true. He can feel it. You're a prat. You're a neck-sniffing, blood-drinking, arrogant, annoying, self-centered, and utterly frustrating prat.
This better be going somewhere good, Arthur says, finally turning around to look at him.
You're mine. My prat. So if you're in danger, I want to know.
Merlin can see the smile on Arthur's face that keeps threatening to emerge.
Someone's got to keep you out of trouble, after all.
Arthur snorts disbelieving air out of his nose. And how on earth could you protect me? Presuming I needed any protection anyway, which I don't.
He walks forward as he speaks, closing what little space Merlin had left between them, and he only stops when he's so close that he's ridiculing the concept of personal space.
I'm magic, remember? Merlin prompts. He doesn't back away from Arthur, though he knows he's long past the moment where he should.
They're standing barely an inch apart in the middle of Arthur's bedroom, and Merlin hates the way his heart is racing. He hates even more that Arthur must be able to hear it, and that those enhanced senses probably have something to do with the self-satisfied smirk on Arthur's face.
If there's a way to sever the connection that he has with you and Morgana, I'll find it.
Arthur looks at Merlin quietly for a few moments, the expression on his face different from anything Merlin has seen from him before. There's a faint smile, so small that it's almost undetectable, but there's also a hint of a frown, his eyebrows drawn down. Evaluating, calculating, wondering. The sunlight from the window shines upon his face, and for a few moments he doesn't look like the prince or a vampire at all. He looks like a normal man, someone that Merlin could have met at home in Aeldor. For a few passing seconds, Merlin can wonder what might have happened if they'd met each other outside of this bizarre situation. And his imagination tells him that this connection between them would still have been there, scent or no scent, and magic or no magic.
You are such a strange little man, Arthur says with a chuckle that sounds far too amused for this situation.
He leans in, his lips brushing against the side of Merlin's mouth like a stealth attack, while his fingers stroke Merlin's cheek. It feels cold, but all that Merlin registers is the buzz of sudden contact. Sudden, and then over all too soon, a split second or less. Arthur kisses him like it's nothing, and then moves away, back to his position at the window. Merlin remains frozen on the spot, eyebrows arched as he tries to work out what exactly just happened.
Perhaps you should head back into the village, Merlin. You can let Guinevere know that it's safe to come back to the castle.
I'll get right on that, Merlin says, each word drawn out a little bit more than he should. As he walks towards the door, his hand presses against the side of his mouth where Arthur's lips had grazed. He's relatively sure that kissing means exactly the same thing for vampires as it does for humans, even if Arthur seems to be trying to play this off as if it's nothing. Neck sniffing, finger sucking, mouth kissing. Merlin has to say that he very much approves of the latest addition to Arthur's skill set.